Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You know, one thing that happened early last year is we put the ball on the ground with some of our exchanges. That's wood. But it's like, okay, so we've been better with our exchanges. You know, you can trust that in all situations, red zone, 4 minute, critical situations. But whether it's 8-man spacing or whether it's a 2-shell in a 7-man box, most of the time doesn't have a lot to do whether he pulls it or not. Usually the edge rusher, somebody that we're reading is a part of that. So certain teams that we've played have decided that they want to jet up the field. The Steelers are one of those. And at times the Texans were like that to try and not let Lamar beat us and get the ball in the perimeter, which that's their decision. You know, obviously having Derek and getting him running downhill has been good for us. And there's certain things that we've evolved to, and there's other things that I think are better for Derek and us when we're under center.
So that's Todd Monken talking about the offense and the way teams defend them and coming off the Ravens' 27-25 loss to the Bills. And let's face it, this was a game where the Ravens outgained the Bills 416 yards to 273, though the three turnovers and a couple of key drops tell the story there. So I guess the question becomes, where does the offense go from here?
Yeah, and we heard Todd Monken when I was asking him about the evolution of the pistol runs coming down the stretch, heading into the final regular season game. And that was him kind of talking a little bit about the ebbs and flows of what they've done from a schematic standpoint. And look, we thought turnovers would tell the story if this didn't happen for the Ravens in Buffalo. We thought not scoring as many, you know, red zone touchdowns as the other team, not being as good in the red zone, would be an issue if they were to find a way to lose this game. I don't think we thought Buffalo being the more effective first half rushing team.
Yeah.
And especially Buffalo being the more effective first half rushing team and Josh Allen playing no role in it whatsoever. I don't know that any of us had that on our bingo card. And that played out. And I wanted to hear that clip again because I do wonder if Todd Monken had success so many different ways rushing the ball. I almost wonder if at the end of the day, there was almost too much to sort through and too many plan B, plan C, plan D. We got so many other things we can do that he shuffled the pot so much. Once they finally got around to making adjustments, which I think happened too late, that nothing ever settled in and they never let anything become the main thing. And I've thought about this a lot. I've gone back and rewatched it. Last year, we thought they were a prisoner of the fact that they didn't have a feature back,
mm-hmm.
right? That was one of the takeaways. If they had a Derrick Henry, they would have just rode him. If they'd have got him at the deadline, right? Then it wouldn't be about a carry here for this back and a carry here for that back. It would just be about Derrick Henry. And what I actually think happened in this game is the presence of a $10 million feature back who had a 1,900-yard season actually worked against them. And I think they had to see what I was seeing in real time, which is just put Justice Hill in there and make that your base offense and go with that for a while. and see where that gets you. Him, Justice Hill, and Lamar at the mesh point against that personnel, they're not going to be able to stop it. And I wonder if the presence of the dominant back came back to in a weird way, in a very ironic twist, mess with Monken's head in a different way than the lack of one did last year. And we found ourselves at a similar point where critical. Yes, they had a lot of yards. Yes, they did a lot of great things. Yes, Lamar had a second half for the ages. But no, they didn't lean in to beating up the other team at the line of scrimmage. They didn't ride any one thing. They didn't utilize Lamar's legs enough. And I almost feel like they were a prisoner of some of the success they had with Derrick Henry in a warped way.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. And Derrick Henry was not effective in the first half of this football game. He had negative rushing yards over expected, just 8 carries for 21 yards. Justice Hill in the first half, 2 carries for 20 yards. I'm with you 100% in the fact that they needed to activate Lamar Jackson's legs more in this football game. But we did see first half, just call it what it is, that they were out physical by the Bills on both sides of the football. We saw that. Kyle Hamilton admitted that, especially on the defensive side of the football. But things did begin to turn in the right direction for Derrick Henry and that ground game in the second half. He had 3 carries of 10-plus yards. They were starting to get the chunk runs there. Even Justice Hill involved as well. And Henry was starting to wear him down. It stinks because that Mark Andrews fumble where they would have had the ball at the 40-some yard line.
Yes, would have opened up the playbook.
Exactly. Yeah. How much more would you have been able to lean on?
Both Andrews turnovers. Yeah.
Yes.
I do wonder.
But I'm saying second half in particular.
But the drop that led to the fumble next play. Like, if they don't have those two turnovers, Henry probably gets over 20 carries in this game, don't you think? Like,
I think he gets the carries, but let's face it, this was at various points in time, including from the bye on into this game, this was a wrecking. This was an unstoppable force.
He ran for 138 yards in 4 straight games heading into that game.
Yeah. So do I think there would have been more volume? Yeah. Do I think they would have done what they needed to do, which is if you're going to run Henry, run him with the 6th offensive lineman, and if you're not, then get him the hell off the field and get your little people on there and sprint all over these guys? I don't think Todd Monken was willing to do that. Why do I don't think he was willing to do that? Because the other guy ran for 2,000 yards. But styles make fights. And I feel like he got in his own head in a weird way this way, sort of like he did last year.
The other part is the Lamar part. And where was the mesh point stuff? And where, like, when the Bills started crashing, they did it differently than the Pittsburgh Steelers did. But they made it pretty clear they were going to make a concerted effort to stop Henry like the Steelers did. Where was the Lamar stuff that we had seen a week ago?
And again, I think the Lamar stuff with Justice Hill would have been more effective. I don't know. I don't know. They're playing that much man, and you've got Justice Hill or Lamar Jackson in the open field running down the sidelines. You can cut that inside. I mean, there's just a lot of things you could have done in those situations with all their little guys 15 yards downfield with their back to the play. I don't get it. I don't get it. But regardless, you know, now we'll see who's back and who's not, right? We know Derrick Henry's a part of this. Justice Hill's a part of this. Lamar Jackson's a part of this. Will Mark Andrews be a part of this? Will Ronnie Stanley be a part of this? Patrick Ricard better damn sight be.
Yeah, he's a free agent, but they better resign.
But why? I mean, that's one where you'd think they would have had that one done already. How does the offense evolve next year? What differences do we see in this run game? Is Todd Monken absolutely positively back here next year? Look, Josh Johnson, are we really cool with that? Is it time to get real about that? You know? Maybe we get real about that. Like, you know, he's going to be, God, what is he, 38-ish? I mean, how about a developmental upside backup quarterback who has a skill set that's a little closer to Lamar's? How about we go back to Rashad Bateman and put a little more money in his pocket and make him feel about being here, feel good about being here? How about we take some of Mark Andrews' money and give it to Isaiah Likely?
You pointed out yesterday where this is the first free agency in a while where this team doesn't have a ton of impact guys at all. The first big domino to fall is what happens with Todd Monken. Is he here? Does he take a head coaching gig? And then it's Ronnie Stanley, who's an impending free agent. That's a tough decision to make there, and of course Mark Andrews as well.
They got a lot of questions. They're going to meet with the media tomorrow at 11. That's, and by they, I mean John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta, their end-of-season press conference. Then we won't hear from them again till around the draft. So a huge Tuesday show guest-wise. We will check in with our friend Ryan O'Halloran. Covers the Bills for the Buffalo News. Get his thoughts on what he saw Sunday night, including Aloysius on the big screen at Highmark Stadium. What
he's
was
really
that all about?
It. Yeah, he's really made it.
Rita Hubbard, our weekly chat with her at 3:30. Terps, they got an ugly win on Sunday against Nebraska. They are now on the road coming up. So we'll get Chris Nockey's thoughts, Maryland Radio at 4. And Cynthia Freeland, what went wrong with the Ravens? She's with NFL Network. She joins us at 4:30.
Yeah, we've got a lot to unpack. Over the coming days and weeks, thoughts about how this team could continue to evolve from a schematic and personnel standpoint. How willing will they be to make forays into the trade and free agency market? I don't think it's a great free agency class. And we know they're really kind of loath to do that stuff as well. And I think right now, the most pressing sort of thing on a lot of fans' minds, certainly something I'm being asked about when I do other podcasts and go on other markets, and even had guys who work for teams in this division reach out to me, what are they saying about Mark Andrews in Baltimore?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think they're going to do with Mark Andrews?
Well,
I know what I would do.
Speaking of that, Mark Andrews did not speak after the game on Sunday. He did not speak during locker room cleanout yesterday. How big a deal is this, and what does the future tell for or show for Mark Andrews? We will discuss next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Here on the Fan.
Roll, flip it, got it. Oh, the ball was dropped. Mark, there's nobody that has more heart and cares more and fights more than Mark. Who's, we wouldn't be here without Mark Andrews. You know, that's what you say to him. So, you know, it's like anything else. I mean, destiny is a decision that you make, and it's a decision is how you handle, you know, what comes in your life. You know, and Mark will handle it fantastic, like he always does, because he's a high character person. He's a tough person, and he's a good person. So. Proud of him, just like I'm proud of all the guys.
So you heard the highlight, courtesy of CBS, Jim Nance on the call. Mark Andrews with the drop on the two-point conversion. Ravens lose 27-25. You heard John Harbaugh talking about Mark Andrews. You did not hear Mark Andrews talk because Mark Andrews did not talk after the game, nor did he talk yesterday during locker room clean-out. So, Jason, you've covered this league, and you've covered teams for a long time. How big a deal is this that Mark Andrews did not talk?
Look, I'm trying. I have different sort of hats I can put on here, and you try to not be stuck in any one silo, right? And so I try to use years as a beat guy, talking to players on the record and off the record, and spending decades in locker rooms and getting different people's opinions on what leadership really is and what it means to be a stand-up guy. You know, whether that's from a Cal Ripken or that's from a Steve Yzerman or... You know, that's from a Jaromir Jagr, or, you know, I'm just trying to think of other people I've talked to over the years who wore a C, or, you know, would have worn a C if that was the kind of thing that you did in that sport. I accountability matters. And I am sure in that locker room, he was distraught. He was torn up. I'm sure he expressed that to a lot of people. But there's an inward and outward component to that. And do I think every player gives a damn about how a player conducts himself with the media? I don't. But let's be real. He's one of the longest tenured guys around here. He's not a vocal leader, but they're not a team of vocal leaders. I mean, who is the vocal leader on that offense? We've had that discussion before. We've seen him be fiery. We've seen him be demonstrative. And frankly, we've seen him come up small in a lot of playoff situations.
Yep.
And so I think when I sort of compartmentalize my fandom aspect of this, my media aspect of this, what do I think management would think of this, right? Because I've talked to a lot of different GMs and executives over the years about how much some of these responsibilities, like speaking to the fans via the media, matter to them. I think it's fairly consequential. This guy went out of his way on a one period where he could have been emotional and hot and just been like, let's get it over. And another where he flies home, he sleeps in his own bed, he thinks it over, he talks about it with the people close to him, he shows up to work and gets the hell out of work before he has to deal with anybody he doesn't want to deal with. That's a conscious effort. And then there's the part of me that also looks at it through the, all right, well, if you're representing Mark Andrews, right, if you're in Team Andrews... And a guy who has been a selfless team first guy takes this action, what could that be telling me? And there's that part of it that tells me maybe he kind of already has gotten the sense that an extension's not in the cards, and a guy who's given heart and soul, you know, and played with his condition and played through injuries and been a heart and soul guy. And if he's already thinking this is my last hurrah and they just want to squat on me for 1 year, $11 million and give my money to somebody else, like, who am I to say that's not what he's thinking? Because by him doing this, it leads you to wonder, you talk to other agents about it and say, well, what do you think this guy is saying by saying nothing? So there is a part of me that feels like for it to go on that long, it's calculated. It's not knee jerk.
It's really surprising for me, because this is one of the leaders, quote unquote, guys wearing the captain patch. Like you said, Jason, he's been here since 2018. He's always been good about talking to the media. And okay, like you said, if you don't want to rash emotion immediately following the game, but to not talk yesterday, it definitely rubs you the wrong
way. By saying nothing and going out of your way to say nothing, you're making a statement,
yes,
whether you want to admit to it or not.
100%. And we put out a poll IA1057 The Fan's how you can vote on the poll. It's brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. It is Wing Tuesday. Buy one, get one half off traditional wings. Happy hour, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday. Can't stop in. Order Buffalo Wild Wings Go and pick it up on your way home or for your next event. Mark Andrews enters the final year of his Ravens deal, age 30 and injured recently. Isaiah Likely eligible for an extension. Already proven to be more productive than Andrews in the playoffs. If you could get a fourth round pick for Andrews, would you trade him, Ravens flock? About 250 votes in, 56% hell yeah, 44% no way.
That's probably some people think, well, they don't understand the value of these things. They're like, well, why can't you get a one from Mark Andrews?
And I talked to a general manager and a front office executive for another team that, let's just say, could use a tight end.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, look, I don't think this is one of these things where they're like I'm friends with these guys. Like, I don't think they're using me to try to get Mark Andrews on the cheap. But these guys are familiar with Mark Andrews' game. They have a lot of respect for Mark Andrews. But Mark Andrews, in an era of now hyper-explosive tight ends, he's not hyper-explosive. At his peak, he wasn't hyper-explosive.
And he's less now that he had the hip drop and the car accident.
He's getting caught from behind more. And so, and he's got only one year left on his deal. And he's pushing age 30. And availability, after never being an issue, has been a big issue two straight years. They think they'd be hard-pressed to get a four for him. Or maybe you get a four and you put in a sliding scale based on participation of snaps and touchdowns. But that's what it's going to be. But they found him in the third round.
Yep.
And if Isaiah Likely can do what Andrews does as the main guy, which I absolutely think he can.
And by the way, they found Likely in the fourth round.
Right. So I would absolutely do it. And frankly, I would have been leaning in that camp before this. But this did prompt me to take a deeper dive on what this guy's done in the playoffs. And it's been frankly suspect. He gets the almost identical amount of targets, if you want to look at his target percentage of the overall passing game, right? In the regular season with Lamar, 22%. In the playoffs, 20%. But his EPA in the regular season, EPA per target, 0.42. Very good. In the playoffs, negative 0.46. Abysmal. This guy has a 20% explosive rate per target, 12-yard play or more in the regular season, 15% in the playoffs. In the regular season, 46% of his targets go for a first down. In the playoffs, it's 30%. In the regular season, he drops 4.8% of his passes. In the playoffs, he drops 20%. His success rate in the regular season, 56%. In the playoffs, 42.5%. In the regular season, 68% of his receptions go for a first down or a touchdown. In the playoffs, it's 50. He catches 69% of his passes from Lamar in the regular season. In the postseason, it's 60%. 4 yards of yak per reception in the regular season, 3 in the postseason. Oh, yeah. And he's got, 44 receiving touchdowns from Lamar in like 90 regular season games. And he's got none in the playoffs.
And he's played 9 playoff games.
It's not a small sample.
No. It is
not. And he's been over 50 yards in a playoff game with Lamar once.
Yes.
And that was the debacle that he put out there Sunday night.
Yeah.
When he also wasn't blocking very well. I think, frankly, the way he's handled this has made it easier for them to trade him because it's made him less of a sympathetic figure. And let's face it, there was already a cash upside age, bang for your buck, buying low on the younger guy component that, if you stripped out the sentimentality, would have already said, Likely's, why wouldn't you pay Likely $11 million instead of this guy?
Yeah.
It may cost you a little more. Has his presence held Likely back? And if these two, in 3 years, never had a big game together, what makes you think in year 4 they're going to?
Yeah, that ship has sailed.
Yeah, that's the part. Kept waiting for it to happen and never did.
Hey, coming up next, we will go behind enemy lines. How are the Buffalo Bills doing after that 27-25 win? What did Ryan O'Halloran think of the game Sunday evening? He covers the Bills for the Buffalo News and he joins us next. Ravens season is over. They lose in Buffalo 27-25. The Bills are getting ready to take on the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC title game. That's the late game on Sunday. And joining us now on the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, he covers the Bills for the Buffalo News. It's our friend Ryan O'Halloran. And Ryan, thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate your time. Let's start with the important stuff first, and that is Aloysius making it on the screen at Highmark Stadium pregame, though he was misidentified as being with us here at 105.7 The Fan. He hasn't been here for a while, but just your thoughts of Jerry making it big like that.
He'll always be here in spirit, though. We did name our Hall of Fame after Dr. Jerry Aloysius Coleman.
We did.
Yeah.
Well, for Baltimore people, it's probably the highlight of the night. And I wasn't even paying attention, and the guy two seats down from me, hey, they put Coleman on the big screen. I'm like messing with my phone, trying to get the camera right, and by the time they did it, it was gone. And, you know, of course, I texted Jerry, and of course, his response was, did you get a picture?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, right. It gets even bigger when the head coach responds to it in the post game, says Buffalo's a city of winners. I think this is going to be a T-shirt. If the Bills win it all, Buffalo, city of winners. Jerry's always going to be remembered.
They're having him at the parade if they win, aren't
right?
They?
Like, and they're going to donate money to a charity and his cause. Like, he's reverse fire. Like, it's a what do they call that? Like the reverse jinx.
Yeah, reverse
he's like
the
reverse
curse.
Jinx
yeah.
this thing.
Yeah.
It was so pathetic. I mean, the fact that McDermott was asked about it, players were asked about it, and in the locker room. And, like, Terrell Bernard was like, yeah, I wasn't paying attention to anything but the Ravens this week. I mean, come on. It's like, you just beat the Ravens. Ask him about the football game like I was doing. But it made for good fodder before the game, talking to Baltimore media. And, they know I know Jerry. And, you know, he's a legend.
Yes, he is.
It's cemented now.
Yes.
He's not just regional anymore. He's branching out.
Yes, he is.
So, Ryan, if I would have told you that the Ravens are going to outgain the Bills 7.3 per play to 4.6, that Lamar is going to play pretty much a spotless second half, but the Ravens were going to lose, and they were going to lose despite Josh Allen only having 147 total yards, and that James Cook was going to have more carries than Derrick Henry, what would you have said?
Well, then also would have added they didn't punt in a road playoff game.
Yeah, how about that?
I would have said the Bills were probably plus +4 on the turnover, including a pick six.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was plus +3, and they got some points off of it. The Ravens, 2 days later, they just got to be kicking themselves. I mean, it was right there. I mean, 21-10, the Bills decided they wanted to win 21-10.
Yes.
Foolish.
Yeah,
foolish.
Joe Brady was a coward, man. He was a coward, straight up.
Yeah, and to me, it's like he didn't help his head coaching prospects. But then again, with these owners, they don't know anything. They see Josh Allen. But I thought the Ravens, they march down the field, they score a touchdown, then it's a Jackson interception. And then they march right back down, and the Bills hold them to a field goal. I thought that was a huge possession. And just sort of to stem the tide a little bit, but statistically. I mean, you give up 176 yards rushing in a playoff game that you win, and you're happy about your rush defense.
It's crazy.
We're talking to Ryan O'Halloran's Inside Access here on The Fan. So, Ryan, just your perception of the Mark Andrews of it all. Not only does he drop the 2-point conversion, he has that fumble, and then we don't think it's being talked enough about the first drop, which was right before the Lamar Jackson fumble. If he catches that ball, at worst, it's 2nd and 2 from the 20, and they're probably doing something different than having Lamar and the bad snap and everything that happened after that. And the fact, as someone that's in the media, like yourself, that he hasn't spoken since.
Yeah, so unpack the mistakes. He had the hat trick there, and
yes,
they had a couple other drops in that game as well. And then the fumble, guys trying to make a play, hell of a play by Menard, I thought in the open field. The 2-point, I didn't really like the play call. Jackson is sort of scrambling toward our corner, a lot of traffic. Still, that's a catch that Mark Andrews, when he does address the media, would say he's got to have that. In terms of Andrews not dealing with it now, well, have fun dealing with it in May, because people aren't going to forget about it. I mean, if I would have made sure he talked yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's just a sign towards he's going to be traded either way. So they're like, they're okay with it, and he's okay with it.
So, you know, it's not a, you know, everybody, it's, you know, well, we just want to hear what he has to say. Yes, that's what we want. We want to hear what he has to say. He's a veteran. So it was disappointing to see that.
Ryan, a huge storyline heading into the game was the Ravens and how they ran all over the Bills in the first matchup. But I thought Buffalo was more physical than the Ravens, especially in the first half, where Buffalo had more rushing yards than the Ravens in the first half. Were you surprised by that?
I was. I thought this was going to be a 25 carry Derrick Henry game, no matter what happened. It was an 18 carry game. And one thing we talked about, 16, even worse. One thing we talked about last week, guys, was would the Bills adjust their personnel? Well, they started off in a 4-3, and they mixed it in when the personnel dictated it, except for on third down. So I thought they were. I thought they heard the rumblings all week saying you're too small, you're not tough enough, you can't stop the run. They used that as internal motivation for whatever works. But they did. I mean, it's Derrick Henry. There were only a couple creases for him in that game. And it was on that one drive in the third quarter where you thought Baltimore's going to take control of this game.
To that end, though, Ryan, and we hit on Brady a little bit there and some of his shortcomings. And look, it's hard. I mean, Todd Monken's offense, 7.3 yards per play, 9.6 yards per attempt. Like, it's hard to say they didn't move the ball, but if I had told you, okay, the Bills are going to counter in the way with the 4-3 and make some adjustments and run blitz on early downs, wouldn't you have thought then that the Ravens would have done more with the sixth offensive lineman? The only time they did it away from the goal line is the 17-yard blast from midfield that Henry almost took to the house. I would have said they get super heavy to combat that and say fight fire with fire, or they get Justice Hill back there in the option game with Lamar and run Lamar outside the tackle box all over the place. And there were no design runs for Lamar. I didn't feel like the Ravens countered it very well until third quarter.
No, if the Ravens go heavy, they're still heavier than the Bills.
Yeah.
So, and then, okay, you know, maybe that opens up some play action and you're getting a Justice Hill against a linebacker in that personnel. I take that matchup. And then with Monken, I didn't like either two-point play. And, you know, you have the Yuli Bulldozer, number 22, getting cranked up on that first two-point possession. Well, then you throw it and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then, yeah, obviously the last one here. So I thought that Henry was underutilized.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, Ryan, let's look ahead. How do you see this matchup, Bills and the Chiefs?
Well, I picked the Bills to win the game, just like I would have picked the Ravens to beat the Chiefs this week. You know, the Chiefs have been living dangerously all season with these one possession games. But what the Bills did in the first meeting, I think, is going to be key here. Is they hit Mahomes a lot, and I think that's going to be critical. They should throw some different things at him. They used the spy a couple times. As a spy, you can catch Patrick Mahomes at this stage. So I think that does make some sense. So I think the Bills are going to win, and they're going to go to their first Super Bowl since 93.
Ryan O'Halloran, always great, man.
Jerry
Thank you so
Coleman,
much.
Jerry yeah. Coleman at the parade. Yeah, Let's go.
Get his flight ready.
Well, Jerry, if you're listening, text me your ring size.
Well, and you know he's not going to want to pay for a hotel. Yes, so can he crash with you, Ryan?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
can you be seen with him up there?
No.
No.
Well, I can handle myself in that regard, because if they win the Super Bowl, I mean, I'll tell Jerry, come on up. You're not going to have to pick up the check.
Right.
Well, he'll be on the first Greyhound.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There you go.
Thanks as always, man. We appreciate
Thanks, buddy.
You.
Have fun in KC.
All right, fellas. See ya.
Hey, coming up next, we couldn't get to it yesterday, but recap of what the Terps did on Sunday. Winning ugly, I guess, is fun, and preview what they have going on as the schedule gets much more daunting for Maryland basketball. That's next here on The Fan.
Mueller's back to Wasegian. Past the screen. He throws up a wild shot. It's no good. And a rebound by Geronimo, and he got fouled in the play. A big rebound by Jordan Geronimo with 1.8 seconds to go.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan, I had a good conversation with Jordan the other day about just, like, he missing 3 weeks and early to mid-December is really tough. And Tafar had played really well, but just for him to stay ready, because I have so much confidence in the fact that if we need energy, we need defensive stops, he's our guy. And we needed some energy. And I thought Jordan was phenomenal the last 4 minutes of the first half and then really changed the complexion of the game in the second half.
The old saying is you'd rather win ugly than lose pretty, and the Terps did that on Sunday, beating Nebraska 69-66. Jordan Geronimo, we heard the highlight, only played 11 minutes. He had 2 points, 7 rebounds, yeah, and 2 blocks in those 11 minutes, helping the Terps win this game on a day when, quite frankly, Derek Queen did not look up for it again.
Derek Queen is struggling right now, and that happens to freshmen, and he is looking like a freshman. And I'll be interested to see what Chris Nockey has to say about my theory when we talk to him at 4 o'clock. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. When they are a run-and-gun, up-tempo team, I think Derek Queen's best qualities, his feet, his vision, his passing, all lend to him producing well, and he relies on his instincts, and he's great. When Derek Queen is playing a half-court game against other bigs, I think his youth shows up. I think his naivete shows up. I think it's a different style of play in the Big Ten than anything he faced in the AAU and high school ranks. And I think it's problematic for him. And I think things start to snowball negatively. And the Terps have not been running and gunning lately. 8 fast break points against Nebraska, just 11 against Northwestern. Queen was awesome against Minnesota. 17 fast break points. They played at tempo. They should have scored 80 points. UCLA, 11 fast break points. Queen was pretty bad. Oregon, they ran and gunned. They almost took them to the limit. They dominated the first half. They played with tempo. Queen was really good. So I think that's something to continue to monitor. And as for the Geronimo of it all, I think Kapari and Geronimo need to play a little more, and I think Derek Queen needs to play a little less because Derek Queen's really struggling on the offensive boards. And you said it, 7 rebounds in 11 minutes for Geronimo. This is the last 1, 2, 3, 4, last 6 games, Terps rebounding margin. Nebraska, -4. Northwestern, +6. Minnesota, -5. UCLA, -4. Oregon, -2. Washington, -7. That's a disturbing trend.
Yeah.
That's a disturbing trend. And we know that Juju is battling, but sometimes Juju's hands work against him.
Yeah.
Derek Queen does not have strong hands right now, and he's having real difficulty holding onto the ball underneath the offensive goal. And then of the guys who are playing regularly, who are the rebounders?
And there was a moment in the Northwestern game in particular where he didn't box out, and Northwestern ended up getting an offensive board there, and Julian got in his face when they were lining up to take a free throw. And there's also been some lackadaisicalness, if that's a word, in his defense as well. I mean, there were definitely,
I think,
in
he
my
needs
notes,
to run the court. Yes. I think he needs to be running around and part of this up-tempo thing where the defense is quickly turning into offense. I do not like what I'm seeing out of him in half-court situations.
The other thing that irked me about that game Sunday, they only shot 12 free throws. And I had in the first half 7 free throws. Why not get it more inside? Like, they only shot 12 free throws. That was after the game where, what, Julian shot 13 himself in the prior game.
Yeah.
They're not playing their game.
No.
They're not playing their game. 8 fast break points, 3 second chance points in that game against Nebraska, and a -4 rebounding ratio. You got double twins in there now. Like, that's not supposed to be happening. I also don't think they're shooting the ball enough. I don't think there's enough volume in their attempts. This team should be shooting the ball 60 times or more in a game if they're playing like they should be playing. That's happened once in the last 6 games.
The other thing that was weird, they were
up, and that was an overtime game.
They were up 9 with, what, like 5 minutes to go? And then a blink of an eye, and it's a tie game. Like, they sort of, it was weird. And the offensive possession stunk. Like, this was like dribble, dribble, dribble. Nobody's moving. And then Selton Miguel's forced to throw up a off-balance 3.
It's too right static. For
the shot. Yeah.
This wasn't down the stretch like you were talking about, Ken, but there was a moment. It was the under 4 TV timeout in that game. And they came out of the TV timeout and got called for a 5-second call and didn't get the ball inbounds. How the hell does that happen?
Well, that's after last week they got the 10-second call at Northwestern.
That's not total. Is that any? None of that's out of character.
No, it's not.
Especially not in close and late situations. And I'm using close in air quotes because when you're up 9 at home, it shouldn't really get close, but it does because they're not real good finishing. This is a real interesting double-edged sword for Willard, because in the era that we're in, okay, does it look like Derek Queen is going to be a lottery pick right now? Not lately, but do you desperately want Derek Queen around next year? You don't want to develop him for 1 year. And you've got to constantly be re-recruiting your players.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's be real. When you do what they had to do, which is go into the portal and get a bunch of mercenaries because your basketball operations stunk at doing their job last year, so you had a lot of holes to fill. Like, there's a case to be made that this kid's minutes need to be cut, but like, you've got to tread lightly there. Like, if Jimmy Patsos does come in this week, I'll be really interested to get his take on that dynamic, because you can't tell me that they haven't known. If I'm sitting there, a basketball novice, screaming, you got to get Queen off the court and get Kapari or Geronimo on, they've got to know it, but at what cost?
Yeah, there's another variable here, and I do want to get Ben's thoughts on this, but we saw this, and I'm not saying it's the same situation, but as soon as Diamond Stone stepped in onto Maryland's campus, he said in his head he was a one and done. And it didn't matter how well he played, he was a one and done, and he was going into the NBA draft. And I wonder if that's in Derek Queen's head too, even if the...
Well, they were using it as a motivating factor. Remember, they were showing him all the mock drafts.
Yeah. So, like, even if the mocks start to turn, is he one and done anyway? But, Ben, just your thoughts on this whole thing.
Yeah, and to the point Jason just makes about the re-recruiting, another thing there, for Maryland to make a run in March, Derek Queen is going to have to be one of their top guys and is going to have to play big minutes. So it's a healthy balance of having him learn from struggles now, but if putting him on the bench doesn't result in that, then it doesn't really work. But at the same time, he's costing you, right? In the Northwestern game, there were multiple rebounds that costed them, but you need him to learn from it now while he's on the court to work in March, but it's just such a bad situation because, again, so many times we see freshmen come in and look like freshmen early and improve as the season goes on. He did not look like a freshman the first month of the season, and as the season has gone on, it's gotten worse and worse, which does not make any sense.
It seems like a long time ago, that game, was it at Purdue, where he was getting revved up by the road crowd, he played well. That seems like miles ago.
And it's, I know, it's hard as a freshman in the Big Ten. I get it. But it's such wild oscillations. Like, Sports Reference has this metric, BPM. Like, it's like a box score efficiency ratio of how much an average player would contribute to the offense on every and defense on every 100 possessions, you know, versus this player. And he oscillates by the game from, like, their most efficient to least efficient. Like, there's no middle ground. Like, his BPMs, -7.9, -1.6, +14, -8, +7, second on the team, -14. Like, it's crazy.
The first few weeks of the season, he was top 10 in the country in that.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make a true freshman who we said, this guy doesn't play like a freshman, and now it's like, this guy is a freshman. He's 100% a freshman. It doesn't make sense. And that some of that has to fall on Willard. Like, why is this guy not getting better through you? And we've seen a couple guys with him. Reese has taken the step with the free throws, and Reese was a Turgeon guy, but are we seeing guys improve a ton with him? I just don't know.
Terps in action again Thursday. They're at 17th-ranked Illinois. That game's a 9 o'clock tip, so pregame coverage starts at 8 right here on 105.7 The Fan. When we come back, we get back to the Ravens and the Ravens' defense. Statistically, they were very good down the stretch, and after a struggle in the first half, played well in the second half, but do they need to ramp up the aggressiveness? Because getting turnovers was a problem down the stretch. We'll discuss next here on The Fan.